Hi, Foxies. The episode you're trying to listen to is right around the corner, but first, we need your help. You may have noticed that there are no ads during The Fox and the Foxhound. We prefer this, being ad haters ourselves, but we need your help to keep it that way. If you love this show, please consider signing up as a patron at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We have Patreon tiers starting at just $1 a month. And not only will you get fun extra content and an unedited cut of every episode 2 days early, you'll be directly responsible for keeping the show going in all of its ad-free glory. Thanks to all of our existing patrons, past patrons, and hopefully future patrons. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to The Fox and the Foxhound.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kevin.
We are a married couple and parents to a very magical toddler. We started our journey around 5 years ago as I revisited the series I've loved for years, and Kevin started his journey into the Potterverse for the first time.
This season, we will be exploring the wizarding world through fan fiction, examining the essence of evil villains with our Dark Dive series, and putting a musical spin on each episode with our hits from the Golden Egg. We also promise to bring you the lighter side of things with our weekly Patronus moments and wildly off-topic tangents and rants.
We love this series and the people who love it with us. So later in the episode, we will let you know how to reach us directly and stay in touch with the community of loyal Foxies who drive the content of our show. Welcome.
Let's go. Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxing, waxing. Give me down to there, hair, shoulder length or longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy.
Hair.
Good job.
I've never seen hair. But also, like, why? Why are you starting the episode in that way? Is it because it's the 70s? Like, is that...
Well, not only is it the 70s, but we're dealing with some hairy boys
Yes, where we left. Yes. Hairy boys. Oh, yeah, that's layered. There actually is quite a bit about hair in the subject, which we'll get to in a second. The subject of
But first, top of the show announcements.
Yes.
We're taking a break.
No, we're not.
Tonight.
Starting tonight. Stop doing that. That's 2 weeks in a row now. People are going to start thinking that you're trying to speak that into existence. We're not taking a break. Next week, you know, you remember how much fun we had revisiting the top 15 best Harry Potter chapters last season? Well, I thought a fun kind of journey this season might be that every now and then we have ChatGPT pick us a random chapter to revisit from the entire series. It was the best way I could think to truly get a random chapter, right? So
now how are you going to rename it as a Potter related thing?
Oh, like the segment?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, we have a week to figure that out. But I'm going to run this through ChatGPT right now, and we will see what chapter it's going to be. Now, the boundary on it is, if it's one of the chapters that we covered that's from the top 15, we will choose another one.
What are you going to specifically ask it?
I'm asking it, give me the name of a random Harry Potter chapter and tell me which book it's from. Because I did some experimentation. I said, tell me a Harry Potter chapter, and it gave me a quote.
It's like seven.
It gave me a quote from a chapter, and I was like, no, tell me a chapter. And it said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's copyrighted material. And so I said, tell me the name of a chapter. I'm not trying to get you to give me the chapter.
Name a book. Name one book, you idiot. I'll throw that thing across the room.
Let's see what it says. It is thinking. The Unbreakable Vow is what it chose, which is from Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Okay.
Great chapter.
The Unbreakable Wow.
The Unbreakable Wow. So we will be revisiting the chapter, The Unbreakable Vow, next week. I'm typing this in my notes currently. I literally just ran that on the hot mic live.
Hot mic.
As we recorded.
In the studio.
In the studio. What do you remember about The Unbreakable Vow?
Anything?
Nothing. Make The Unbreakable Vow. And that would be Helena Bonham Carter's ridiculous Bellatrix Lestrange in the movie. Okay. What are we talking about this week?
Well, we have finally entered the world of fan fiction.
Dun, dun, da, da.
And we started reading All the Young Dudes.
Yes, highly recommended.
And so we're going to talk about the first 10 chapters.
Yes, first 10 chapters. The chapters are fairly short. It's a long fan fiction. There's like There were at least 90 some chapters. Maybe 100? I don't know. A lot. But we read the first 10. So yes, this is our first foray into fan fiction. I expect us to talk specifically about the story, of course, but also just about our thoughts on fan fiction in general.
And what do you think? Are you here for it?
I'm here for it.
I'm totally here for it.
Are you? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because I'm so here for it. Let's talk about it. Okay. What is All the Young Dudes about so far, anyway?
So far, it centers around the experience of Remus Lupin just before he enters Hogwarts and his first couple months.
Yes. So Marauders era fan fiction, arguably, and me not really being in the fan fiction underground world, this may be a gross mischaracterization, but I would say probably the most famous Marauders fan fiction out there, maybe one of the most famous Harry Potter fan fictions out there. I mean, this is like a super famous fan fiction that I think a lot of people have read. So yes, Marauders era, we get the introduction of the Marauders, but yeah, it definitely seems to be a story mostly centered around Remus. Okay. Did you notice in chapter one, the parallels between Dumbledore coming to St. Edmund's in All the Young Dudes and Dumbledore going to the orphanage to meet Tom Riddle?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he was wearing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
That like maroon suit.
Like he goes around and hunts down problem children for his school. Can't he go to spelling bees? Go to like the science Olympiad, Odyssey of the Mind. Pick the kid that made the coolest robot. Well, invite them to your school.
But
scour the earth for the most fucked up kids you can find.
I mean, I think
a werewolf boy, an evil version boy, Michael Myers.
I think there is something to be said for Dumbledore's seeking out of children who would have absolutely otherwise never ended up at that school. Children who come from like backgrounds where they don't know what magic is. They don't know if they have magic. Tommy Riddle's pretty sure he does because he's a cocky little bastard. But these are kids who would have just stayed in the system. I think that's true for both of them. But I think, like, what an interesting parallel. Never would parallel Lupin and Tom Riddle.
I know. That is weird.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Dumbledore going to visit these kids and recruit these kids that kind of meshes up with something I was already thinking today anyway, so it's kind of weird. You only understand the world at the age that you're at, right? So when you're 15, you live in a 15-year-old's world. Doesn't matter how mature you are.
Yeah.
Your brain's not completely developed yet. You're at this certain stage of life. And things seem bigger and more important than they will to you years later when you look back on them.
Definitely.
And you can look back and agree that they were big to you then, but they don't feel the same now.
Yeah.
And what makes me think about that is hanging out with the kid all day in the yard and thinking that her thinking is not going anywhere past this yard. Right. I can be in the yard looking at my phone, thinking about the news. I'm thinking about the election that's coming up. I'm thinking about Gaza and Ukraine, but I'm also looking at a bird and I'm also planting a flower. And it's a lot to be an adult.
Yeah.
And she's thinking like, oh, I'm going to put the sand in this bucket. I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Where's mom? There's a bee.
Yeah.
And as she gets older, her world will expand. So I'm kind of meditating on that today. And then when he says that running cross country back at St. Edmund's, you could just kind of like dip out and run away and like go do something else. And it made me think about the concept of skipping school when you're young.
Yes.
And how it seems like, oh my God, what if we just left?
I know.
Like into the world.
Right.
But it's like, no one's thinking about you.
Right.
Like no one's thinking anything. Yeah. I might have a passing thought if I see like a 13-year-old kid on a Wednesday afternoon, like, you should be in school.
Right.
But I'm not going to do anything about it. I don't care what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You're just a background character.
Yeah.
Well, Dumbledore is so old and has seen so much in the wizarding world and experienced so much that he has this this confidence that's also calming.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like everyone expects him to react a certain way.
Yes.
But he's a wise old wizard.
Yes.
And it's so great that this is what we get from kind of the archetype of like the old wizard.
Yeah.
Which it's like, yes, boy, full moon last night. Yeah, sure, you can have some candy. You can have the whole bag.
Right.
Like nothing you say to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you any of the crazy reaction that you think you're going to get because he's old and wise, but also because he's a good adult for kids.
Yeah.
He has a way of taking the thing that he knows a kid is the most insecure about or the most troubled by. And if he brings it up, he's nonchalant or he just doesn't bring it up at all.
Right.
He's not the elephant in the room guy.
Definitely not. And he's also not the hiding anything guy, which is so ironic because he absolutely is. But in these kind of initial interactions with people, he's so transparent.
Yeah, he is transparent and he's trusting.
Yeah.
It's almost like, so at one of my old jobs, I used to interact with a therapist whose clients all had developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would sit in on like group sessions that were sort of casual, not like private therapy, but just sort of like group encouraging sessions. And what I found with the people that worked in that demographic is you could always tell someone who worked there or someone who didn't work there by the way that they would speak to the patients. Like they would speak to someone in a wheelchair really loudly.
Right.
Like somehow being in a wheelchair meant that you couldn't hear right.
Right.
Or they would approach someone with Down syndrome as if they were a child and they would talk to them like they're a child, even though it's a grown man.
Yeah.
And so what you would see from the therapist and the staff that worked there, these are just their patients.
Yeah.
They're fellow adults.
Exactly.
They're just like, hey, Mike, what's up? How's the basketball game?
Yeah.
You know, don't forget to bring your pencil to the next thing, whatever. And I feel like Dumbledore has that. I have worked with kids for so long that I don't have to coddle them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to placate them. I can treat them with respect and with dignity and talk to them like normal. When I was growing up, that's what I loved.
Oh,
the adults would just talk to me like I was a human being and not down to me.
Yes. That's the best feeling. It makes you feel like you're on this equal ground, which is very calming and reassuring, but also I think kind of endears you to a kid when a kid is always wanting to be older.
Yeah.
You know, it's not until we hit like, for me anyway, like mid-20s that I started being like, no, I'm good here. Maybe we can just kind of put a pause on any future birthdays. But right. up until that point, you're like, oh, I can't wait till I'm older. Oh, I can't wait until I'm older. And so when you have an adult just kind of talking to you like a fellow adult, I mean, like, my God, that's the best thing.
And we notice our nieces and nephews will test us on this. You know, they'll like drop a curse word when they're talking just to see if we're going to reprimand them.
Yes.
Or they'll mention death or something just to see if it shakes us up. You can't take the bait.
Right, exactly. You have to just not even blink. It did occur to me that we didn't actually give credit to the author yet for this fan fiction.
Yeah, I wanted a little history of like, when was it written?
Yeah, I don't. So I can see that it was written. It looks like it was published on where we are reading it, which is Archive of Our Own, published in 2017, March 2nd, 2017. Y'all out there with much better knowledge than us, because we are so new at this, is this just when it was posted on Archive of Our Own? Is this when it was published originally? Like someone, Teddy, you will know. Teddy, tell us. So the author is Miss Kingbean, 89. This is what's really striking me as so cool about fan fiction, is like, we don't know who this is. We don't know this person's God-given name. You know, we don't know where they're from. We don't know anything. There's a layer of anonymity with this that's really cool.
Even where you read it, it looks like a really sketchy website.
Right.
It looks like they're going to ask you for money to give to a Nigerian prince or something.
You were so confused about the archive of our own website. Yeah. And I kind of explained to you, I was like, yeah, but fan fiction is like anyone can post fan fiction, right? So like inherently sites that have fan fiction are going to operate really kind of like Reddit or Tumblr.
Yeah.
They're going to operate like message board type sites because they don't have a hired staff of writers curating all the content. Anyone can post to it. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's also why there's some like hilariously bad fan fiction out there too. This is not one of those. Right. This is very well written. So let's talk about this. We've talked about Dumbledore. It's a good point that you're making about Dumbledore. And it also makes me realize like this author is clearly someone who obviously they're a fan of the original series, but they also clearly really get these characters. I mean, Dumbledore, that characterization of Dumbledore could have been written by the original author. It's very, I mean, it tracks completely.
Yeah.
McGonagall's the same way. Young Snape the same way. Although these younger characters, we're really kind of meeting them for the first time because we barely interacted with them at this age in the original series.
I was surprised how easy it was for me to slip into this as if it was just canon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd have to remind myself sometimes like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, this is not, none of this is canon.
I know.
Don't get it confused in your mind. This is what poor Star Wars fans have to go through.
But it's also like, there is no canon really for this period. So
I know that's what's crazy.
So, I mean, really, it's kind of almost an existential question. If there's no original canon for this, then why is this not canon?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's when it becomes your headcanon.
Then it's your headcanon. Exactly.
So the first chapter, we see that Remus is a wolf boy.
Yes.
And this reminded me of this old movie I've brought up before on the podcast called The Curse of the Werewolf.
God, I thought you were going to say Teen Wolf.
And it's okay. Sad because it's this little boy at the beginning and they have to keep him locked in this room. This is a common werewolf trope.
It's very sad. Like,
it happens when they're kids and you have to keep them locked away and they suffer for it. And he's in this boarding home. It doesn't seem like it's very fun.
Yeah.
You know, once every full moon, once a month, he, you know, freaks out, generally scratches himself up, bangs himself up when he turns into a wolf.
I would say he freaks out a little bit, yeah.
And then Matron, who's just like the grandma from Muppet Babies, like all you can see is the green and white striped socks. What? But you can't see. But she talks like Charlie Brown's teacher. She's like, wom, wom, wom,
wom, wom, wom, wom. No, I was picturing like a Mrs. Trunchbull from Matilda kind of vibe.
Wah, 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 wah.
Okay. All right.
Cool. So Matron's like, hey boy, let's put some Bactine on them scratches. I know you's a wolf.
Jesus. Okay.
But she's like, hey, there's this cat that came here to see you. His name is Mr. Dumbledore, Dr. Dumbledore.
What is wrong with you right now? What's happening? What, like, is this jokey fun time? Are we going to actually talk about this story or is it going to be jokey fun time the whole time?
Jokey fun time.
Like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
So the boy meets Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. Dumbledore says, listen, let's go for a walk and try not to talk about how you are a wolf. So they go for this walk and Dumbledore talks to him and he's like, hey man, listen, I know you're a wolf kid.
A werewolf, hun. He's a werewolf.
I know you're a werewolf kid.
Why are you adding kid to it?
I have this killer school. This place seems like a dump. Would you like to come to my school? It's pretty cool. He's not like, this is going to be your saving grace.
No.
You can be a powerful wizard. He doesn't really pitch him on it.
No.
Very hard. He's just like, hey, you want to get out of here and come to my school? And Remus is like, I don't care. Like, I hate this place and no one really likes me. And like, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
But he can smell the magic.
That's really cool. That's like a super cool.
And he
cool.
can smell the treats.
Yes.
So I love that he's super sensitive before and after an episode. It's almost like a seizure.
It's really like, I think that's a very cool way to think about it. Like, there's so little written about this wizarding world's kind of rules about being a werewolf or lycanthropy. Like, there's so little that is actually canon.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to get you know, some headcanon-y stuff like this. I love it. So let's talk about young Remus, the werewolf, not wolf boy.
Right.
Maybe we can stop calling him wolf boy.
Yeah.
What did you think of this characterization of him as a kid? His personality, obviously he's been through a lot of trauma, but what do you think about like this kid? And also I want to know, who do you picture? Because I had such a clear mental image that I could not shake.
Of an actor?
Yes. In a specific role.
All right. Let me think about that in a second.
Okay.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I instantly was on board with this being Remus's background.
Absolutely.
I feel like it tracks with his adult personality.
Yes. Even though it's really different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally tracks for me.
I feel like it is probably very easy. And people who have read a lot of fan fiction, tell me if this is true. I would imagine it's the easy road to write young Remus as just a smaller version of adult Remus. You know, like little quiet, very smart, you know, never really felt as cool as James and Sirius, kind of timid, maybe a little shy, like unassuming, you know, all those kind of traits that we think of with this character as an adult, even though he's also like an incredibly tortured adult. Like, but to see this like little punk, like very understandably, absolutely no reason to believe he would not have been a little punk because he's had to defend himself.
But he's also deeply insecure and very, very sensitive.
Deeply insecure.
Yeah.
But to have him, and maybe part of this is because of the mental image I have and the specific character I have in mind, that like maybe he's a little more of a punk in my head. Do you want to know who it is I'm picturing?
Yeah.
I cannot shake it. It's River Phoenix in Stand By Me.
Oh, that's perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Like with the shaved head, like I could not, as soon as this character started getting
that's
described,
really
I was like, River Phoenix and Stand By Me, got it. Like, because he's such a little like tough kid, but he's also like
a little scared kid.
He's so scared all the time.
And once again, this continues the daddy issues
of
all of the male characters in Hogwarts, that his dad killed himself.
Yeah. It's so, speaking of that, what was it like for you to read a Harry Potter work that was put in our own kind of adult vernacular that doesn't sidestep or tiptoe around things that you wouldn't find in a young adult book, like suicide, cursing, you know, like.
I mean, the cursing kind of brought me out of it a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When they say like, it said bitches, I said it, I think it said like something about shit or something. And I was kind of like, meh, I could do without that.
But that's how kids talk.
But it wasn't kids talking.
Oh.
It was just like the omniscient, like what Remus was thinking.
Well, then that's how kids think. I mean, I don't know. I loved it. I think it's...
To me, it brought me out of it. It was like, I didn't see it as necessary.
Okay.
Look, I curse like a sailor. Anyone listens to the show knows that. But I also... There was no point for it. It's not driving home a point. It was just almost put in like... That kind of brought me out of the headspace into, oh, yeah, it's fan fiction, which is like, ooh, look what we can do. Like, I don't know. I could do without it.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree.
I could do without it because it felt inconsistent with the series.
Sure. You know, and I definitely can see that. I'm not going to try and like sell you on my take on it. For me, it was very refreshing because... Anytime you're an adult reading the original series, you are an adult reading a book that was written for young adults, children, teenagers, right? There's a certain level of maturity in the writing that is just not there in the original series. It can't be.
Right.
You know? And I find myself liking a little bit of grit within this universe and within this canon. Even if it's a headcanon, sure, but I find myself liking it a little grittier and a little dirtier because it feels more real.
Oh, it gives me the ick.
Gives you the ick?
Yeah, I mean, I like the mature writing style.
Yeah.
But careful with it is
what
I think.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we'll see as it develops, you know, if things are going to give you the ick. Let's take a quick break from the episode to talk about ways you can support the show, how to contact us, and let us give a couple of big thank yous. Funding for this show comes entirely from our patrons on Patreon. These wonderful people pay for our hosting fees, social media and promotional subscriptions, equipment upgrades and maintenance, and so much more. If you love this show, becoming a patron is the most direct way to support us. Find out more at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We also understand that money is tight. So if you're looking for a free way to support us, rating and reviewing The Fox and the Foxhound on Apple Podcasts is such a huge help. Not only does it give us the warm and fuzzies, it also promotes the show within Apple Podcasts and helps us reach new potential Foxies. Even if you listen elsewhere, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to reach us, the best way is by joining our Discord server, the FFH Mischief Center. There is a link to join on the homepage of our website, thefoxandthefoxhound.com. While you're there, consider sending us a message or a voicemail. Both are easy to find on the site. Or email us at thefoxandthefoxhound@gmail.com. Following us on social media ensures you won't miss any announcements about future meetups, episode delays, and more. We're on Twitter at Fox and Foxhound, no the's, and on Instagram and TikTok at The Fox and the Foxhound. You can also find our page on Facebook at facebook.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. Finally, we'd like to thank a few very special people. Hannah Gibb, who manages our Discord server and is also a Marauder level patron. Josh Bailey, our co-producer and manager of Mischief, who is also a Marauder level patron. Judson Hurd, who composed the original music for our show. And all of our Patreon members. We wouldn't be able to do any of this without all of you. Okay. Let's get back to the episode. What did you think about our other kind of foundational canon characters that we met? Sirius Black and James and Peter.
I'm cool with it so far. He meets all of them on the Hogwarts Express. He's going for the first time. The one thing that I thought was that really stood out for me in this that I really liked was the fact that the author keeps bringing up class.
Yeah.
And how Sirius clearly comes from money and how Lily clearly comes from money and how they conduct themselves and how they speak. And we know when you think about British dialects, they're so class-based.
Yes.
And so you have, like, you know, the royal family. And you have that sort of way of talking that no one else outside of that family
received
really
pronunciation,
talks that way.
Right?
Yeah. RP. But you know, in America, it's different. It's so big and it's all over the place. But I feel like in England, you could really hear that. He even says something about his H's.
Yes, he said he was going to stop dropping his H's. He like made an internal commitment to stop dropping his H's. That is a really, really cool.
But it's a good point thing. Because that's something that really does stand out as a kid. You see, wow, this kid's clothes are dirty. He wears the same clothes every day. Mm-hmm. Oh, this kid's wearing an Adidas jacket. Like, class hits you even before you understand what it is when you're young.
Absolutely. What did you think? And I'll go ahead and tell you, I loved this. What did you think about this Remus is, I'm assuming, dyslexic kind of situation? Is that what you took from it, that he's dyslexic?
Well, that he's dyslexic, but also I feel like more of it is that he's just not at the reading level that everyone else is at.
I'll tell you why.
Now, the words mixing up themselves sounds like dyslexia, how they like jumble around the page.
Yeah.
But he has a crazy good memory. That kind of sounds like dyslexia to me.
Well, and also the fact that like there's never this clear kind of explanation, because I guess it's Sirius asks him, didn't you learn? Like, weren't you taught reading? And he's like, I was. I guess I just wasn't taught well enough. You know what I mean? Like, there's this kind of element of like, you know, I learned to read, but maybe I just didn't learn right. And he says something to Sirius about like, I don't think I see what other people see when I look at the page. And then I think the biggest tell, and this is, I'm not dyslexic, but as someone with ADHD, I definitely get this. Where he's just been told that he's dumb Yeah. You know, no, I was never told I was dumb by anyone but myself, but I told myself that I was dumb quite a lot. But I've heard so many people talk about their experiences growing up with dyslexia and being told that they were just stupid by other people.
This is why Dax Shepard has a podcast called Armchair Expert. Mm. His whole life, he's dyslexic. His whole life has been this battle of him trying to prove that he's smart. He wants everyone to think that he's smart. It's all he wants is for people to think that he's smart.
Yeah.
He is smart. He's a brilliant guy.
Yeah.
But he had told himself that he wasn't because of his dyslexia. Yeah. Right. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's almost like in the new Wonka movie, you know, Wonka's illiterate. Mm. And I think that literacy is a very taboo thing.
Definitely.
In our culture, at least in American culture, mm-hmm. it's something that people don't talk about.
Right.
And you know that there are people who can't read, but you don't think about them. Right. You don't think about them navigating the world and paying bills and going to their job and keeping up with their families. They're adults. There are people in their 60s that can't read.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as someone who loves reading and thinks literacy is one of the greatest gifts that God gave us as human beings, it's something that that always seems to like really shock me when I remember how many people that are out there who can't read. But we don't talk about literacy enough. We don't talk about the illiterate community and what they face. Like, you don't see it on television. You don't see it in literature. Like,
that is so true.
Isn't it like a weird hidden stigma thing?
Well, and I can tell you, as someone who I've had clients who have had literacy challenges or limitations, or they just plain and simple never learned to read. It just wasn't a part of their story.
It's not hard to create a person who can't read.
Right. But I've had clients who, for whatever reason, didn't learn to read, and there was so much shame that even I was their therapist, and they didn't want to tell me until we ran into a situation where it was kind of unavoidable. And it was just, it's kind of wild to me, because in my role and I'm not doing therapy anymore, but in my role as a therapist, I've heard it all, right? All the things that someone could do or be or have challenges in or whatever, I've heard it all. And I've never seen someone share something with so much shame as when they shared they couldn't read. Like, it's
interesting, huh?
Yeah. Did you notice the laying of foundation for Peter kind of to be eventually the turncoat? I think it's kind of brilliantly done. But you see why he's endearing to them. So much of the time, I think we talked about this when we covered this part of the original series. We're like, why were they ever friends with him? Like, why were they so close to Peter that he could even betray them? Like, how would they ever become friends?
Yeah.
That's like, but this makes sense, right? Yeah,
it does make sense. And I love the different relationships between the boys' dynamics, especially the whole Sirius and Remus dynamic.
I love it.
And how Sirius just keeps looking at him. It's like, why is he always looking at me? Like, every time I turn around, this dude's staring at me, and then he just kind of half smiles. But he kind of gives me more shit than anybody else in the group.
Yeah.
And what's his problem? And then they get into that little scuffle on the Quidditch pitch.
Yeah.
And Sirius is kind of flexing on him. They both go down into the mud puddle. They get 5 points taken away. They go into the showers or whatever. And you can see that their friendship is starting to bud.
Yeah.
And so many male friendships, they do form out of friction. They're almost born like fire. They're born from initial friction.
Definitely. And this is also, you know, in the opening notes before chapter one, where the author kind of lays out, there was a Spotify playlist in there, you know, like all kinds of stuff. The author had said, this is a Wolfstar fic, which I know means that this is a fan fiction that pairs Sirius and Remus romantically. That's what that means.
Eventually.
Yeah. I mean, they're kids now. So but I think it's really kind of beautifully written because yes, it's a budding friendship, but you can also kind of tell that there's just like something.
There's like a little like overt infatuation. There's like an overt obsession with each other that they both have.
Yes.
And yeah, like that's a little weird.
Really deep fascination. Like Sirius is written about, and with this being an omniscient perspective from Remus's, like Sirius is written about more than anyone else. I think, I mean, I don't have a word count, but yeah. The observations are so much more detailed about Sirius. And like, it's just when I put myself in the shoes of someone trying to craft this as a story, I'm like, how do you convey that as a tone that reads so fluidly and without spoon feeding it to your audience? This is why I don't write shit.
Right. Like, yeah. It's such a crazy skill. Shrieking Shack.
Yeah.
Him being in that shack as a little boy, like away from the school, down a tunnel with no adults around, in him little shack with his little cot.
And how much pain he's in.
And he's like in excruciating pain. He can feel his bones cracking and his tendons elongating and all this crazy shit going on. And then to think about the Shrieking Shack and what they inevitably do to Snape. And the Shrieking Shack and what it means in that big moment when they almost kill Sirius and Scabbers is there and that whole Shrieking Shack situation. It might be the Shrieking Shack chapter.
Yeah, I think so. But
having that much history start when he's 11 years old is really sets up and taints that place.
It does. And also to add an extra layer of sadness, there's almost a sense of like, he's kind of like, oh, this place isn't so bad compared to being locked in like dungeons up until now.
I think my deepest compassion trigger or whatever, like the most heartbreaking thing to me is people like being lonely.
Oh, I know.
I cannot take like the kid that doesn't get picked for the basketball team or like the kid that doesn't get to go on the trip when everybody else gets to go.
Oh, I hate it.
Like, I hate stuff like that.
I hate stuff like that too.
I hate like if there's like a bunch of people staying in a house and it's like, you get this room and you get this room and you get this room, but you got to stay upstairs in this like closet. I always want to be like, no, nobody.
What's your problem with Home Alone? Yeah.
Here's my thing. You know me. I want a giant compound where everyone that I love lives. We all live in a giant community. I want to go back to like hunter-gatherer days and we just all live in like one community.
I don't really want that.
It makes me sad to think of like people being, I know.
Well, and so much of this isolation, it's so true what you said about this characterization of Remus, as unexpected as it is, so fully tracks with canon adult Remus later in the series. This like forced isolation, just very Harry like in a lot of ways, really. Like this, I don't need anybody. I'm just going to go be a mess by myself. Like, fuck this. Things are feeling a little too intense. So now I'm going to like moonwalk away. Like, and a new also, girl.
My dad may have killed himself because he figured out that he was the dad of a werewolf boy.
Right. Yeah. Which also, like, when you think about Remus's reaction in the canon books to finding out he's going to become a father.
Yeah. Teddy.
It really kind of like, I don't know. It breaks your heart a little bit more, I think, for that whole situation. Not just for him specifically.
Wait, is Teddy Cummins actual Teddy?
I don't know, Teddy.
This is like a never-ending story. I don't know what's real.
Say my name, bestie.
Say my name. Moonstar.
Is it really Moonstar? Have we talked about this?
We have.
Okay.
I just said Moonstar because you said it was a Moonstar mashup shipping fanfic.
Wolfstar.
That's what I said. Wolf Moon.
Okay, cool. So, was there anything else specific you wanted to talk about? I mean, these are really kind of groundwork chapters. I'm excited to get further into it.
I wanted to ask you what you thought of the Snape, of this Snape character, young Snape character.
Oh, I mean, I think it totally makes sense. And I think that it's really cool to have more time with Lily, trying to kind of like explain why Snape is her friend and how he's actually not so bad if you get to know him. Yeah. Like, that felt so authentic to me, that conversation when they're both on the way to Slughorn's, I think.
Do you know how when we talked about the scene in Snape's Worst Memories or whatever it was?
Yeah.
That you go back and you see James and them bullying him and you're like, how could it be that way? They were always bullies. I think what this author understands is that young friendship dynamics, the power shifts all the time.
Yes.
And it's probably the same with girls, but it's definitely the same with boys.
Oh, yeah.
You could be the boy with power in your group and become the boy that everyone gets shit to the group. Like, you can move from the alpha to the beta to the sub beta back to the alpha. So when you look at the limited young Marauder stuff that we have in the original series, it's easy to go, wait, what? James was an asshole? It's like, yes, James was an asshole and a good person. And he was this and he was this, because this is what teenagers are.
Exactly. And you're so right. I mean, the origins of, you know, the pranks, of course, but the origins of this, like, Snape versus the Marauders, and Snape and his little gang, but mainly Snape versus the Marauders, is really pretty organic here. You know, it's not, there's not really one issue that kicks it off. I mean, there is a little bit, which is this thing in potions class, you know, where Snape says something to Remus about being dumb, which is clearly a trigger to him. And I get that. You know how triggered I get by, like, me thinking someone is telling me I'm dumb, or like me feeling dumb. Like, it really triggers the shit out of me. So, like, I guess you could say that's where this rivalry starts, but really it simmers, and you can see that even in these first 10 chapters, like, it's already kind of escalating and heating up, and you can see how something like this over the course of 7 years can get so big and, like, defining, where it's like, there's no coming back from that.
Just the same as no one declares we're friends. No one declares we're enemies. Exactly. It just kind of organically happens.
Yeah. I think it's well written. I think it's really well written. The more I think about it, the more I think about how many missteps this author could have made in these first 10 chapters and how easily those missteps were avoided.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm excited to read more.
When I was a kid, when I was about this age, so probably 11 and 12, like those 2 years, when I was probably, like, let's say from my 11th birthday to like my 13th birthday, those 2 years, I had a small, like, skateboarding friend group, and it was me and my friend Thad and my friend Jeremy, who I don't see that much anymore, but we're friends on Facebook. I still love him to death. We had like a little skate crew. Both of those guys went on to have successful military careers too, by the way. But Thad was the oldest of us. He wasn't that much older. He was the oldest. He was the coolest. He was the handsomest. And he was like kind of our default leader, right? Of our little trio that we had going on.
Yeah.
And we had a falling out that we couldn't even explain. I think I've talked about it on the show before, but we had this little falling out, and I think it centered around Thad feeling like we were calling him dumb or something. Oh. And he just stopped talking to us.
Wow.
And it was weird because he lived like across the street from my grandma. I could see his house.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy's grandma's house was like behind my grandma's house. We were all right there physically together. And so he didn't talk to us for months or weeks. We just see him like getting in the car. He'd go skateboard by himself and he wouldn't talk to us. I don't even remember like what happened. And it completely threw us off because we didn't know how to repair it.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how to repair it because we're just like young boys.
Yeah.
But it threw the power dynamic off because me and Jeremy are like, we're not the leaders. Like,
right.
Where's our leader? Like, what's happening here? And when we finally made up and like got back on good graces, it was strange how the power dynamic had shifted, because it's almost like Thad didn't trust us anymore.
Oh,
he didn't trust us with his feelings. So he wasn't as open. And I remember looking back now, I can remember wanting that leadership back, mm-hmm. and wanting him back in that power seat again.
Yeah.
This is just to highlight the micro dynamics of little boys' friendships.
Absolutely.
And how things move around, and it's never certain, and it's always a little awkward.
And I do feel like there is a lot of overlap from what I remember about being a young girl. But I mean, of course, there are going to be some big fundamental differences with it. I mean, girls are often a lot more, I think, strategic. I can only speak from my own experience, right? A lot more kind of like thinking three or four moves ahead in terms of their friend group, which can end up turning really messy.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's always a de facto leader. There's always, I don't know. This is such an interesting age to read more about, and not just be, we get this in the first Harry Potter book, like Harry and Hermione and Ron are this age, but it's all about the Sorcerer's Stone and like the troll in the dungeon and Fluffy. And like, there's so much adventure with it. It's kind of nice to have these moments to breathe and see what it would be like to be an 11-year-old kid truly navigating this world.
And it's fun to hear the voice of a fan and not the voice of an author.
Yes. Especially, of the author, I mean. Especially this author. It's so nice to hear the voice of someone else. And I think this is going to be the start of a really beautiful kind of angle for this show, where we can start leaning more into the fan-created content, because that's who this belongs to.
Yeah.
Now, you know?
And that's the spirit of LeakyCon.
Definitely. You know,
the spirit of LeakyCon is, this is our fandom. Yes. No one can take it away from us, including the person that originally created the world.
Exactly.
You put art out into the world. You can't put the genie back into the bottle.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, there you go. So Raven had emailed us and said, please tell me the fan fiction series will be called Only Fanfics or some more clever version of that.
Well, you just named it.
But I don't think we can name.
I don't think we can legally say that.
Well, I think we can legally say that. I don't know. I feel like it's going to make our search results a little weird. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it could mess with the algorithm.
It's gonna be like people of like, it's gonna be videos of naked people like farting on cakes and shit.
It's gonna end up being very strange. So I do think we do have to come up with something, though, because just like last season when we had, you know, our deep dives, we have like a name usually for what type of episode it is. So like, I don't know. We've got to think on it.
Yeah.
We got to let it stew. But thank you, Raven. You're so funny. Anything else about All the Young Dudes chapters 1 through 10?
No, it's cool. I'm looking forward to reading more.
Me too. It's time for Hits from the Golden Egg.
That's right, folks. Get out on the dance floor. Grab your partner. Hike up that poodle skirt. It's time for Hits from the Golden Egg.
I'm sincerely hoping neither of us chose Moth the Hoople, All the Young Dudes. It's a little too on the nose.
I didn't.
Okay.
I'm not that familiar with Moth the Hoople that I would know a song, even though my stepdad was really into him when I was young.
But you know, All the Young Dudes. I clearly don't know the words, but okay. What's your submission for your hit?
So my submission is a song.
Okay.
Not an album.
Okay. Got it.
But an actual song. And it's by one of my favorite bands of all time, a band called Face to Face.
Okay.
And it's a song called Ordinary.
Ooh, is this a song that, like, do you think a lot of people will be familiar with it? Is it a deep cut?
No, not a lot of people will be familiar with it. If you're a Face to Face fan, mm-hmm. you definitely like this song.
Okay.
But so it's hard to put Face to Face like in a category. Like, they're not a punk band. They're a punk band in the way that Bad Religion is a punk band.
Okay.
They're not a tall pink spikes fucking kick the door open anarchy punk band.
Sure.
They're very like positive.
Oh, that's nice.
Type of band, you know?
I like that.
but they're not pop punk either.
Okay.
Whatever the bridge is from pop punk to punk.
Okay.
Which some people say those lines are way too blurry. Like some people think Bad Religion's too pop punky for them.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Some people think NoFX isn't punk enough.
Oh.
You know, like yeah. there's some weird gray area in there. But I've always loved this song, and it is an anthem for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And do you want me to read you the lyrics?
Please, yes.
Now you've made it up. It's all inside your mind. Now you've given up. You don't know it's there if you don't try. So you've given in along with all your friends, and you're still alone. The means don't always justify the end. Ordinary. A look in the mirror is not enough. What makes you think that you're not one of us? If you make it up and start to use your mind, it isn't difficult. You don't know what's there if you don't try.
That's perfect.
But the line that's like super famous in this that has been in my mind for, you know, rent free for 25 years or 20 years or whatever is, a look in the mirror is not enough. What makes you think that you're not one of us? This is what the boys are saying.
Yes.
To Remus. Like, so dude, what is it that makes you think that you're not one of us?
Right.
And I think that that's just kind of goes back to like the power play of friendship really and stuff. Really
beautiful. Here's why this is a great segment for you and I to do. And this is why I'm so excited about this segment is that you're a lyrics guy and I'm like an overall vibe sound gal. Like, I rarely know the words accurately to any song, but there are some songs that to me just sound like a time or they sound like a vibe that captures it. So your choice is lyrically absolutely perfect. My choice, I think, is vibe wise, absolutely perfect, but the lyrics don't make a lick of sense. Really just period, but definitely not as they apply to this. My submission is Procol Harum's A Whiter Shade of Pale.
Nice.
I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs, but it's also like, to me, this song is like that early 70s, like it came out, I think in like 69, but like the early 70s, kind of like a little bit sad, like youthful, but like the heavy burden of youth. Oh, you love it. Kind of, oh God, you're I fucking love it.
You're such a Procol Harum. You're an Echo and the Bunnymen girl.
I do love Echo and the Bunnymen.
Smith's girl. Yes. You'd have loved this band I saw last night.
I am, to clarify, I could not tell you another song that Procol Harum does.
Yeah.
I only know A Whiter Shade of Pale, but it is one of my favorite songs. It's so epic. And if you're not familiar with it, you probably are, but look it up and listen to it. I'm pretty sure it was in... I think they used it in a very famous movie, maybe The Big Chill.
Let me listen to it and I'll be able to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were hits from the Golden Egg.
Thank you for listening. Come back next week when we'll have the Monkees.
It's time for Patronus Moments.
Patronus Moments are moments of Patronus. That's why they're called Patronus Moments.
Beautiful. I will go first. My Patronus moment happened today, and I've been very, very, very tired all day today, but the highlight of my day was when we finally got Paris in that bicycle cart. We have a little cart that you can hook up to the bicycle.
It's a trailer.
It's a little trailer.
Yeah.
And we've had it for a year, but our child has... very strong opinions about what she does and does not want to do.
And it's not that she's a brat. She's actually way easier than most toddlers you've dealt with. Like Definitely. Everyone says she's such a good kid, but it's that she doesn't suffer a fool.
Right.
Like she's not one of these toddlers that you can just be like, okay, guess what? Put your hand in this bucket and get a surprise. She's going to be like, no.
What's in the bucket? I don't like the sound of that. Like, right. She's got like a baseline of suspicion.
About everything. She doesn't trust adults.
Which, you know, I kind of like that. But so we've had this trailer and, you know, she was kind of too young unknowingly to us when we first got it. And it was a birthday present for her last birthday. And then it was winter, so we couldn't use it. And you've been really wanting to try it out. And of course, you first brought it out in the backyard and we were like, do you want to go sit in it? No, 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 Wyckett. No, I don't want to do that. And so we both just kind of dropped it. And then I was like thinking in my head, I was like, you know what? The thing about Paris, and I think the thing about a lot of two-year-olds, is sometimes you just got to go, hey, let me show you something, and pick her up and put her ass in the cart.
Yeah.
And prove to her that she would really like it. Because if you're waiting for her to go do it, it's never going to happen.
She has plenty of other interest.
Like her
sandbox.
She
doesn't need another thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what we did. Just put her in there. And she was kind of like, she sort of just like froze.
She was a little terrified. We just pulled her around the yard.
Yeah.
And then we figured out the seatbelts.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes seatbelts because she calls them nice and safe.
Nice and safe. Yes.
And then we went on a test run. I hooked it up to my bike. And we did a couple laps up and down the street.
Yes.
And then we put our little helmets on and actually took her around the whole block.
Yes.
And she didn't like the helmet, but she liked it otherwise.
I took a video. I'm going to put it in Discord in the Patronus Moments channel. So if you're not on our Discord, join it and you can see this. I'll do it tonight. But you are riding by with her and you're like, wave to mama. And I'm like, oh, hi.
She does nothing.
She does not even look at me. And it is so... the queen in the motorcade, like just the side profile. I mean, it looks like she's the queen being paraded in front of her subjects. And she's like, yes, yes. Very nice. Very nice. Where are we going? Could you please drive a bit faster?
What's weird is I don't have a mirror or anything on my handlebars. So I can't see her back there. So I have to like turn around and look at her. And I was saying, is it fun? And she would go, mm-hmm.
She was not unhappy in any way. She like, just was not going. She wasn't going to pander to me.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my Patronus moment. What was your Patronus moment?
So it was a pretty good weekend. I could have picked a few different things.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick this show I went to last night. It was free bands all day at the amphitheater near our house as part of the Greater Azalea Festival that happens in Wilmington, which the 77th annual,
which is
problematic in different ways, but. This event was called Tunes and Blooms, and it had a bunch of bands, and it had one of my favorite local bands, Kicking Bird, and then this other band called The Great Indoors. And The Great Indoors, you can check them out. They have one single, I think, on Apple Music and Spotify. They don't have an album yet, but it seems like it's coming. They are sad bastard music, sad boy, Smiths, Morrissey, Cure vibe.
All the stuff I like.
So good. And they're so young, and they're so cocky, and they're so good.
I love it.
But me and my friend Lauren went, and we, you know, we went there to see Kicking Bird, and she said, "Let's stick around. This is fun. There's not many, maybe 150 people there. This is 150 people in a 1,000 seat amphitheater,
right?"
And she said, "Let's stick it out and see what the next band is." And we just had great conversations about getting older. And like the sun was going down, it was starting to get nighttime and it was starting to get colder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a weird scene because we're so used to being there when it's packed out with 1,100 people and there's a big band playing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool to be able to walk around this little venue and it was sort of chill. And we were trying to guess what the next band would sound like based on what they look like when they came out.
We
completely nailed it.
Yes.
And it was one of those, it was that feeling that me and Lauren were talking about last night. One of my favorite feelings on the planet, which I constantly chase this high, is going to see a band you've never heard of and they slay.
Oh, I know.
And you instantly are like, I love this band.
Yes.
What have you put out? What is your whole deal? Like, yes. I'm so on board.
That was you and me seeing First Aid Kit open for Bright Eyes.
Exactly.
We were like, who the fuck are these people? They're incredible.
Feeling. And Lauren was like, man, this is so cool when you don't know who someone is. And then you see them. And then they're really good. And they're not what you thought they were going to be.
It's the best.
And you just think, wow, life always has more surprises for you.
Yes. Oh, what a nice perspective. Well, it's time to shout out our marauders.
Teddy Cummings, Larissa freaking Oatman, Maeve Richards, Cody Juris, Sammy Two Tills, Lindsay Prestige, you know she's friggin' magical, Melissa Hunter got a bow and arrow and she bagged them hair. Nikki, Nikki, Two Tails, Natalia Ward's got a blowout. Kelly Moore and Amber Biggs and Mallory Gallagher's going out. Josh Bailey, Dean Heath, Black Carolina Panther. I'll talk about his hair. Heather Bevels, Pete Collins, Michael Terry, 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 hey. I was going to try an even harder song that was...
Which one?
Hannah Gives the Bovinator. Found it was a groupie to hide in a movie. Pretend she was Stephen McCabe. You know what I mean? That one?
Oh, yeah. I'm not super familiar with her.
Hannah Gibb, Stephen McCabe. Emily's going to get mad at the way I pronounce her name. Her last name spelled C-H-O-P-E. She wants me to say chop, but I am not. It is chope.
Nice. I've never seen Hair.
But you hear me singing the songs.
Constantly.
The Claude Hubel Bukowski.
Yeah.
Donna was groovy to hide in a movie. Pretend he's Fellini or Antonioni or even his countryman Roman Polanski. No, wrapped into one. Mm-hmm. One Claude Hubel Bukowski. Uh-huh. Manchester, England, England. Have you ever seen Hair?
I just said I've never seen Hair.
Have you ever seen the musical, the play?
No.
You never seen the movie or the play?
No.
You know they get naked at the end of the play.
Yes. That's like the whole thing that everyone knows about Hair. Yes. Speaking of musicals, tomorrow.
Do you think that at one of those productions at the end of the play, when they all get naked, that any of the productions look like that bunch of bananas that we just... Y'all, listen, if you've stayed this long, you're probably a marauder. You're probably a patron. So it's fine. We got a bunch of bananas that look like they come from Dr. X.
Yeah.
Like, these things were hit with radiation.
These are weird.
We've continually been calling them girthy boys.
We need to... That's, like, another thing I need to post.
They're like walking canes, y'all.
In Discord. I need to take a picture, but we need something for scale. Like...
Like, they are approved as a flotation device.
It's really... I will put it in Discord in the show channel. These, because they have to be seen to be believed. These bananas are ridiculous. Girthy boys.
What is something that everyone would know? How about we'll use like a playing card?
I mean, it's like 15 times the playing size of a playing card. I don't know. Like, that's a very weird unit of measurement for a banana. A playing card is flat and rectangular. How am I supposed to compare it to a banana? Oh, you mean in the picture for scale?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Oh my God, you got to keep up.
I'm very tired. I've been like especially anemic today and very tired. And my brain doesn't work, as we've established on this podcast before.
Also, I forgot to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
Our bathtub, when you get in it tomorrow, it might have like some water in it.
Okay.
Because like something's wrong with the drain or something. I looked down in it and I think it was filled with hair.